Welcome to The Sound of Economics, a podcast from Bruegel, a Brussels-based economic think tank. This is an installment of our Backstage series. My name is Rebecca Christie. I'm a visiting fellow here at Bruegel, and I'm here with Nicolas Véran, senior fellow, and we are going to talk to you about an event we had today, the emerging new geography of financial centers in Europe. This event took place at Bruegel under the Chatham House rule, but we can tell you a little bit about what we talked about and what the bottom line is.
Thanks, Rebecca. And I think indeed we had a very thought-provoking discussion about the emerging and perhaps more importantly, future geography of financial centers in Europe. There is an emerging geography in the sense of not everybody in Europe, not every city is competing to be the future hub of financial services. And I think one reality that has crystallized in the last 2-3 years since the Brexit vote is indeed that there is a top five group of front runners in that competition to welcome financial services that would no longer be located in London, either because they move from London to the continent or simply because there is financial development that doesn't go to London and therefore the new investment has to go someplace else. And that group of front runner is five cities in Europe. They are all in the Eurozone. They're perhaps in the order, descending order of size, from a financial perspective, Frankfurt, Paris, Amsterdam, Dublin, and Luxembourg. Of course, Dublin and Luxembourg are much smaller cities, so we're talking about the different kind of realities. They're also more specialized financial centers compared to particularly Frankfurt and Paris, which are kind of all-purpose, general purpose, but these are the top five that come up for international business. That doesn't include, for example, back office, unregulated business that goes a lot, for example, to Warsaw, where there has been a lot of development in the last few years, including before Brexit, of back office and other jobs. Some of them actually highly qualified, but not in terms of relocating a regulated entity, a bank, a broker dealer, an insurance company that would need a new license. So that's essentially what we're observing. Now, of course, it's easier to describe this recent past than to get sure about the future, especially as it has not happened yet. So a lot is unclear. A lot is unclear about what will happen with the UK, with London, whether they will stay in the EU, why not, whether they will stay in the single market, which could actually encompass a broader range of scenarios than just staying in the EU, or whether they leave the single market, and here again, in an orderly, planned manner, or in a disorderly, no-deal, hard Brexit scenario. So all these sub-scenarios about London have vast structural consequences for the future European or EU27 financial system, and this is very much what our discussion has been about.
How did you see the breakdown between where the people are going and where the financial functions are going? That was one theme that came up, was that the different business areas are moving to these different cities you mentioned with their different specializations, but the human capital might not want to go in the same directions.
That's right, and that's been a very interesting distinction that I also took away from the conversation. So one thing is to locate new regulated entities, look for a new license, pick a new regulator. So you will have, for example, a banking or an investment services entity located by some national regulatory authority, if, especially when it comes, for example, to MiFID II functions, whereas this is still a national framework. There is no European supervisor for these things. A bit less, of course, for banking with banking union, but even there is still a role, as we know, for national competent authority. And that's one thing. And the other thing is, where do you move the jobs? So what we heard is that, if I caricature a bit, France is a loser on the former and a winner on the latter. There are many staff from these firms that apparently want to move to Paris as opposed to other possible locations. But when it comes to the lawyers and the regulatory affairs or compliance officers, they prefer to locate the entities in other countries. So you have this duality that is appearing in the landscape.
In terms of some of the real financial infrastructure, how does the equivalence debate work out? How can the UK establish equivalence and maintain all of its relationships with the euro area when there isn't the same centralized supervision on the EU side?
Well, I think we have really two ways of looking at this question right now. One is a kind of, you know, standard response from the EU institutions. Equivalence is equivalence. We're not having mutual recognition. We're not having, you know, enhanced equivalence. It's not necessarily something you should wish for. Therefore, we have a framework and it's tried and tested. And then there is the other way of looking at it, which is, okay, we'll have a completely new unprecedented situation where we have this massive financial center in London. We'll stay big no matter what, which is just next door, connected with a tunnel, and which will probably not be viewed the same way, including from a legal and regulatory perspective, as, for example, you know, New York or Singapore or Toronto or what have you. And here, I think we first need simply to know what is a form of Brexit going forward. So we need a bit of more Brexit dust to settle before this debate about whether there is a new framework for equivalence or something like that that emerged from this unique relationship going forward. And I think, frankly, it's a very stimulating debate at this point, but a bit premature because a number of bigger questions, in a way, have to be answered first about what Brexit really is or isn't.
People seem to think that London would shrink by about 10% when all this is said and done in terms of people moving and businesses moving and all of that. How massive a change to the financial world order is that?
I think 10% is a baseline scenario. So basically, if everything from now is benign, even if the UK ends up staying in the European Union with, for example, a second referendum, the view is that there would be 10% that is now more distributed in those top five financial centers, particularly so Frankfurt, Paris, Amsterdam, Dublin, and London. Now, there are scenarios all the way to a hard no-deal Brexit in which the loss is greater than that. So 10% is not a huge change. Lots greater can be lots greater.
You were the most optimistic person in the room when it came to the UK staying in the EU or in the single market. But it's certainly something that we can't rule out at this point. I got the sense that a lot of the changes are things that might have been happening anyway, and that Brexit has been giving people an excuse to just move ahead a little more quickly. I mean, London's a very expensive city. It's a very expensive place to have workers. A lot of these firms maybe are very excited to have reasons to move their staff and their infrastructure to cheaper places.
That's right. And it seems very much to be the case that the Brexit contingency planning for no-deal Brexit that very few people thought would happen and hasn't happened yet, isn't likely to happen now. But this has had a kind of psychological trigger effect in corporate planning. And it has opened a range of questions which were not open in the previous era in terms of how do we do cost optimization? How do we do client service optimization in terms of having some activities in London, but some also in other places? My optimism, by the way, if that's the right word, is really about the UK staying in the single market. I'm agnostic in terms of staying in the EU. I think there is a range of scenarios that people generally don't give enough weight, or many people don't give enough weight to, where the UK leaves the EU but stays in the single market forever. And this is not just Norway Plus. There are a range of scenarios because there are you have to allow for the possibility of time inconsistency. So I think essentially what I'm saying is that the prospect of leaving the single market in the baseline scenario is beyond business planning horizon. So basically the business decisions that you see now that are not in the category of tail risk contingency planning are predicated on the assumptions that for the foreseeable future, which means typically the next 2 years, 3 years, the UK is in the single market.
One question that came up is, are we introducing new systemic risk by distributing the functions among these specialty cities rather than having them all in one physical location? With the interconnectedness of the modern world, I think that's a very different question now than it would have been 10 or 20 years ago. But it's still an interesting point. If a firm fails in one place, what happens to its cousins or siblings in other places, and how do regulators try and deal with that?
That's right. And there are different dimensions to this. One, of course, is London versus the rest of the EU. Another is the different functions and what that means, for example, for the resolvability of large complex financial firms which have different operations under different national jurisdictions. And then you have the specific, not directly Brexit related, but Brexit impacted question of home host issues within the banking union, within the Eurozone, geographical ring fencing, which, as we know, is a major current obstacle to the completion of the banking union. So all these issues come together, are impacted by technology, are impacted by new ways the firms are organizing themselves. We don't really have a firm response. I mean, there is a naive way of saying, you know, if you don't have to all your eggs in the same basket, not everything in the same center, that may mitigate some concentrated risk, but the complexity itself creates risk of its own. And here, I think we're only at the very beginning, or not even at the beginning, of what will be probably a long learning journey.
So on the optimistic side, the future of EU financial centers might be a lot of bustling hubs, attracting human capital, attracting smaller businesses and innovation, and people looking for a fresh start or a new way to build into the industry. Do we have any worst case scenarios? Is there any reason we should panic?
Again and again and again. And even, for example, if you take the last episode last month when people saw, well, there is a possibility of no deal. And indeed, that was the case until the very last few days. There has been lessons learned there that can be used the next time there is this kind of cliff edge. So I'm not very worried about Brexit-related financial instability. Now, in a post-Brexit UK, especially in a post-hard Brexit UK, you can have scenarios of national disruption, including, frankly, starting with the integrity of the United Kingdom itself. And that might trigger financial instability down the line, what's the currency for independent whatever nation of the United Kingdom, things like that. And but that's very remote. I don't think it's for the immediate next step. And in any case, I don't think it represents global or even European financial stability risk. It's more of a domestic nature.
Any other big takeaways from today's event?
It's difficult to summarize everything. And as you said, this was not a public discussion, even without attribution. But I think we had a very rich discussion that made me think about the future scenarios. And I think it made me realize certainly how much we still don't know about how financial centers can organize themselves in this unprecedented circumstance created by Brexit. The thing is, we don't have many data points. There was Amsterdam, then there was London, then there was New York, but also London. And here we are. And Amsterdam was 3 centuries ago. So we don't have many benchmarks for this transition that lies ahead.
Well, thanks so much for joining us. You've been listening to the Sound of Economics podcast from Bruegel. This has been an installment of the Backstage series. For more from Bruegel, please check out our website, our YouTube channel, and our SoundCloud channel. Thanks very much.